Our first reading from the Psalms is an acknowledgement of God's justice and righteousness. You are righteous, O Lord, and your judgments are right. You have appointed your decrees in righteousness and in all faithfulness. My zeal consumes me because my foes forget your words. Your promise is well tried, and your servant loves it. I am small and despised, yet I do not forget your precepts. Your righteousness is an everlasting righteousness, and your law is the truth. Trouble and anguish have come upon me, but your commandments are my delight. Your decrees are righteous forever. Give me understanding that I may live. Our next reading from Habakkuk is a dialogue between the prophet and God and expresses the prophet's impatience. This cry is born of deep pain at what seems to be the violence and social destruction created by those who are unjust and disregard God's ways. Like Zacchaeus in the Gospel reading, going up a tree to see Jesus, the prophet goes to a high place, a watchtower, to hear what God will say to him. The oracle that the prophet Habakkuk saw. O Lord, how long shall I cry for help, and you will not listen? Or cry to you, violence, and you will not save? Why do you make me see wrongdoing and look at trouble? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. So the law becomes slack and justice never prevails. The wicked surround the righteous. Therefore judgment comes forth perverted. I will stand at my watchpost and station myself on the rampart. I will keep watch to see what he will say to me and what he will answer concerning my complaint. Then the Lord answered me and said, write the vision, make it plain on tablets so that a runner may read it. For there is still a vision of the appointed time. It speaks of the end and does not lie. If it seems to tarry, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. Look at the proud. Their spirit is not right in them, but the righteous live by their faith. Teach us wisdom, O God. Let your word bring us life.
Sometimes I try and think of a title for my sermons, or my message, as I prefer to call it. And so, how long, O God, how long, is what I came up for this morning. O God, how long will I cry for help, but you will not hear, or cry to you about the violence, yet you will not save? In the face of injustices and the widespread suffering of the innocent, we wonder, where is God? As humankind continues to plunder the earth, and we watch our beautiful creation struggle, where is God? Today we hear this cry of human desolation from the prophet Habakkuk. Where is God? As we watch and hear and read of the violence daily on our news media, where is God? It's so easy to be discouraged. Even strong believers like Habakkuk find it hard not to lose heart. Only fragments of this prophet's words have survived, preserved in our scriptures. And we're not sure exactly when he lived. But Old Testament scholars and Hebrew scholars believe that what has been passed down to us in three short chapters is a is not one original unit, but writings that have a common theme and that have been put together in a poetical form during the height of the Babylonian powers when the Israelites were in, Hebrew people were in exile. And they think that this dates to the decade about 608 to 598 before the Common Era. The author is honestly confronting the profoundly disturbing question of why a just God is silent when the wicked seem to swallow up the righteous. To this perennial question, the prophet receives an answer that has eternal validity. God is still sovereign, and in God's own way, and at the proper time, God will deal with the wicked. But the righteous shall live by their faith. Earlier this month, on Social Justice Sunday, Mark Henley used part of Habakkuk's writing, along with other readings, to set the scene for his passionate plea about housing and homelessness in Australia, and particularly in South Australia and Adelaide. Habakkuk is one of the lectionary readings for today, and when I saw him use that, I thought, oh, would I still be able to preach on it? But yes, he has a completely different focus to me. And today I want to focus on the plight of the planet, because that is where my passion lies. Now, I know I have mentioned it before, and I have probably mentioned it here, how back in the 80s, I made my own discovery of God in creation. I was just beginning my new journey in faith and spirituality, and I wanted to believe in God, but I didn't know how to connect. The idea of a male father figure up in the sky was most unhelpful to me. So what and where could I find God? And I knew that something was stirring within my spirit, and I had that great longing to understand, where is God? It was out in my garden at Belair, and I was looking at a flower and gazing at its beauty. And I'd already plucked it, and I thought, this flower's going to die now before it produces seeds. And so I was a bit in anguish about that as well. And so, but anyway, as I gazed at this beauty, I had one of those epiphany moments. And the light bulb went on. Because I realised that even if there was a flower exactly the same in every single way, it couldn't actually be identical because it was made up of different molecules. The molecules in that were not the same as the molecules in that. So I suddenly thought, yes, I understand how unique each part of creation is. And I thought, yes, I can believe in something in the universe and I can put the label God onto that. Another moment of revelation came when I first saw the photograph of Earth from space and I was completely entranced. It was so beautiful, hanging there like a blue and white jewel. It is my number one photograph of the 20th century. I absolutely love it. Earlier this month, again, Murray Alta hosted an event put on by PCNet SA, which is the Progressive Christianity Network of South Australia. And Professor Bob Douglas addressed about 60 people here on a Saturday morning on what he sees as the most urgent challenges facing our species. That is, transforming our human world in ways that will give our children and our grandchildren and their progeny and offspring a chance of surviving in the difficult decades that are coming. And he talked about the threads of the continuing existence of life on Earth. They include the progressive collapse of the ecosystems on which our lives depend, the growing depletion of the planet's resources, the poisoning of our environment by toxins and chemicals and pollution, and the extent to which we delude ourselves that we do not need to change because we will stumble on a mechanism for survival. Now, I won't go through it all because there is a précis in the Vision magazine that's come out today, and also if you want to have the full paper of what he presented, you can get a copy through the office. And the second part of his presentation was the use of kitchen table conversations. And again, in the Vision magazine, there is an article about that. And it was really interesting how, as there are 60 people around, you know, sort of six or seven around each table, sat there talking, how much came out of what we discussed, respectfully listening to one another and asking questions and thinking of possibilities. We have prophets in our time, like Habakkuk. Many of you will be familiar with the movie and the book An Inconvenient Truth by Al Gore, the former Vice President of the USA. And I can't help but wonder what would it be like now if he had won the presidency in 2000 instead of George W. Bush. However, Al Gore says that that loss, whilst being a hard blow, enabled him to bring into clear focus the mission that he had been pursuing for years. And in the book, he refers to the blue marble and the Earthrise, what we have here on our screen today, using pictures of Earth from space. Another prophet of our time, who is now 80 years old, is the Canadian environmentalist and prophet David Suzuki. And I sort of Googled yesterday and there were about 27 quotes on the, haven't read anything of his for a while, but I picked out this one. We are in a giant car heading towards a brick wall and everyone's arguing over where they're going to sit. People, especially people in positions of power, have invested a tremendous amount of effort and time to get where they are. They don't really want to hear that we're on the wrong path, that we've got to shift gears and start thinking differently. The human brain now holds the key to our future. We have to recall the image of the planet from outer space, a single entity in which air, water, and continents are interconnected. That is our home. Another one, just using that image from outer space. Swiss theologian Hans Kuhn drafted a declaration of a global ethic, which was presented to the Parliament of World's Religions in Chicago in 1993. That's 23 years ago now. And the declaration was adopted by representatives of over 40 different world faiths, and there have been many more signatories since. Part of the preamble says this: the world is in agony. The agony is so pervasive and urgent that we are compelled to name its manifestations so that the depth of the pain may be clear. Peace deludes us. The planet is being destroyed. Neighbours live in fear. Men and women are estranged from each other. Children die. This is abhorrent. The preamble's much longer than that, but that's the bits I picked out. And part of the declaration says this: we are interdependent. Each of us depends on the well-being of the whole. And so we have to respect. And so we have respect for the community of living beings, for people, animals and plants, and for the preservation of the earth, the air, water and soil. And it's not just about the environment, It is about peace, non-violence, equality, justice, poverty, and so much more. It's an inspirational document, and if you have access to the internet, go and Google Hans Kung and the Global Declaration of a Global Ethic. I read it again yesterday. And when I did so and read about how those different people from different faiths had come together and talked and dialogued, it sounded to me much like the kitchen table talk, but that was on a much higher level than what we were doing. And that's what we practiced here only 4 weeks ago. So, I do encourage you to have a look at it. It's really inspirational. But I want to go back to my image of God. Now, most of you, like me, will have inherited an image of God as out there or up there, perhaps in control of everything, watching over us like a parent, loving us, reprimanding us, providing for us, listening to our prayers. The doctrines that we have inherited speak of a three-tiered universe, with heaven up there, which is a good place, and where we hope to go when we die. And then there's the earth, where we live our lives. And somewhere below, there is this idea of hell or a dark place, and we definitely don't want to go there when we die. We don't want to end up there. Certainly not for eternity. I was at the Common Dreams Progressing Spirituality Conference in Brisbane about 4 or 5 weeks ago. It was the end of September anyway. And there, Diana Butler Bass, a US theologian, calls that model of God the vertical God. That's what we have inherited. And she calls that model, she uses the image of an elevator. So we're on the ground floor, and we hope that we can get in and press the button and go up and actually be able to get out of the door when we get up there. And the basement doesn't get used very much, and in fact she says we've probably put sticky tape over so that you can't use the button unless there's somebody that we really don't like who we would be quite happy to press that button and go down there. I mean, it's amusing, but it actually is quite an interesting image for us. We wouldn't mind consigning a few people down there, I don't suppose. And she says that we have to jettison this model of God as obsolete and embrace a model of God that has the connection between every part of the creation. It's not just the earth as we see it from space, but the creative, life-giving energy and spirit present in the whole cosmos. And she had an image there which was a computer-generated image of what she thought the spirit of God and all of this might look like connected, and it didn't make a lot of sense to me, but I hope some people found it helpful. But what she said was, and so it's a huge jump. But I want to tell you that having made that leap myself, it's a much more realistic way for me to understand God. I cannot pray to a God and expect a result like putting a credit card into a hole in the wall and getting the money out that I want. I actually have to be a part of the answer because the Spirit of God is within me. And this new model has given me so much hope. It is so positive. It is so different to that vertical elevator model. Now, you might not find what I'm saying as being comfortable for you. And I don't expect you to embrace these ideas without question, because each one of us has to make our own journey through life and live with our own integrity in this post-enlightenment, emerging global era that is coming to birth. But when we think how far we have already come with understanding human rights, the abolition of slavery, the breakdown of segregation on racial lines, gender equality, condemnation of religious bigotry, acceptance of diversity. I see a lot of what Jesus taught being played out in our world today, and that gives me hope for the future. So back to Habakkuk and his anguished cry. How long, O God, how long? His concept of God and the problems of his time are not the same as us living in the 21st century. But he had faith and hope, and that helped him in his time. And these are the final verses of Habakkuk. Even though the fig trees have no fruit, and no grapes grow on the vines, though the olive crop fails, and the fields produce no grain, though the sheep all die, and the cattle stalls are empty, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will celebrate the God of my salvation. God, the living God, is my strength. He makes my feet as nimble as the deer and keeps me safe on the mountains. So when the way ahead seems uncertain, when the news is mostly negative, when we feel powerless to affect change, it is good to remember that we are hardly alone. Not just other people the world over, but all the generations of people who have ever lived through times when the future was uncertain, when the news was mostly negative, when they felt powerless to change their lives. Those with hope had better odds of surviving, it seems. Do not lose heart. Do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do act justly now. Love mercy now. Walk humbly now. You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it. And let me finish with the words of Lloyd Gearing from his book Reimagining God, and we read these words on Friday night at Gateways. Stand in awe of this star-clad universe. Marvel at the evolving diversity of life in this planet. Value everything on which our common life evolves. Appreciate the total cultural legacy we have received from our forebears, and let us devote ourselves in a self-sacrificial way to the responsibility now laid before upon us for the future of our species and all planetary life. Amen. And now I invite you to spend some time in quiet reflection, as Craig is now going to play for us, and we'll have some images on the screen.